Thank you all for coming to our panel today. One housekeeping matter. Some of you have been to the other panels and presentations through this conference. In order for everyone to hear, when we open it up for questions, I'd appreciate it if you'd wait till they bring you the microphone and then ask your question. That'll allow us to hear everybody. So we'll have that in the back. And I'd like to just now introduce each of the panelists, all dear friends of mine, and I'm grateful they've taken time out of their busy schedules and vacations to come and be here with us. I'll let you read all about them in their bios in the program. I instead just want to highlight for each one of them something I admire about them. So this is Allie Isom. She's now the Director of Institutional Marketing for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And one thing I admire about Allie is that she takes the time and the effort to understand human beings. And our very first conversation was in a parking garage. We just happened to bump into each other, and we'd heard of work each of the other was doing. And immediately our conversation went to individuals that she was reaching out to and stepping into their shoes to understand them. So that's what I want you to know about Allie. She's also incredibly, you know, accomplished in many other ways. Addison and I have become friends through long, long conversations. And I think it started out with, I'm in the administration at BYU. I serve as the deputy general counsel. And this was a way for a student to kind of fight against the man, I guess it was. And it's kind of like, I'm going to knock on a door and see if they'll open it. And when I did, and when we began to talk, I've appreciated Addison's perseverance in moving forward in ways that I think are important for BYU students generally, but also in learning how to work productively within organizations. I hope it's almost been like, I wish we could give you like an hour of credit or 3 hours of credit of like institutional, you know, work that way. But I've appreciated his approach that way. And then Liz Darger, I've appreciated one thing. She's also, again, Addison's very accomplished. You should come see his comedy troupe sometime. He's on BYU's Divine Comedy team. Liz Darger and I have gotten to be very good friends too through our professional work. One thing that I really admire about her is her willingness to be vulnerable. She has, probably in this last year, taken on kind of the role of being the church or the BYU representative in difficult situations in a range of athletic roles that she plays. And I have appreciated her ability, and actually it's true courage, to stand for principles of truth and also principles of understanding. And she, I think, will be one of the people at BYU that will help us as a university, not just on the issues we'll discuss today, but on a broad range of issues, help people understand us as an institution and help us understand others. And I think this is just a model for that in many contexts. So I'm grateful for all three of them. I'll have each of them talk a little bit about things they have done in the area of reaching out to and being reached out to as part of the LGBTQ community. Each of them has fascinating experiences. I hope they'll share some of that. That'll take about roughly half of our time. And then I anticipate being able to take questions from you. We'll probably batch some of them and allow them to respond. Feel free to ask questions that are personal to you or that relate to the overall issues. Again, this conference is about religious freedom. And so we want to keep it in kind of the context more of an academic and a theoretical perspective as we talk about personal issues and not have this be any, it's not a place for antagonism of any sort is I guess what I'm asking for, is I want this to also be a safe conversation space for everyone here. And with that, we'll go ahead and start with Allie.
Thanks, Steve. I'm really honored to be here. Because I'm 6 feet tall, I'm going to pull this out.
Please do. Can maybe. Come out?
I'm also wimpy, apparently.
Oh, bless you. Okay. Sorry, I just didn't want to hunch over the whole time. After 3 years in the Utah Governor's Office as Deputy Chief of Staff, Communications Director, and Spokesperson, I left the office in 2014 and was invited to participate as a staff member in the Public Affairs Department for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So my background is in public policy and communications. And the first year I was with the church, I also took an assignment to oversee a refresh of a website that was then called MormonsandGays.org. And as I talk about my experiences, please keep in mind that in no way am I taking credit for or responsibility for the website. It was created under the direction of church leaders at the very highest levels, and it was a joint effort. Everyone from apostle to copywriter to community partner had a major role and contributed in meaningful ways. And nor do I presume to speak on behalf of the LDS Church. I'm not here today as a spokesperson. I'm here on personal time. And these words are my own at the gracious invitation of Steve and BYU. So as I mentioned before, leaders directed our approach and content for what is now known as mormonandgay.lds.org. And as we approached this website, there were a few things we wanted to achieve. We wanted to provide hope. We wanted to share the stories and of those who subscribe to our faith, who also happen to be LGBTQ. We wanted to teach love, and the premise of Mormon and Gay was simple and I think profound. That was to help God's children remain in the Savior Jesus Christ light as they navigate their journey. The site was not intended to answer every question, and it could not possibly respond to every scenario. Rather, we hoped to recognize that every traveler in life's journey is unique, and we wanted to provide a way for those who experience same-sex attraction or their family members or leaders within our local congregations. We wanted to provide everyone a common vernacular, a way to talk about the issue, and a common understanding about both the church's theology, but also our approach to love and to support those who are LGBTQ. And our core message was, please stay in the light. We began our development process first by surveying the users of the existing site. We reached out to them and said, what do you like about it? What don't you like about it? What's helpful? What's not? And then we used that context from that survey in a larger conversation, and we reached out to key stakeholders in the dialogue, and we reached out to all of them. We earnestly wanted to understand everyone's point of view, and from critics of the church to those who are defenders of our faith. We weren't particular about group affiliation, but we really sincerely wanted to understand their perspectives and help. So we asked them to share their stories. We asked them to, where were the points of conflict? Where were the points of connection? Where's the success? Where's the heartbreak? What are the data that you have or the studies that you're privy to? And we sought personal accounts, and we just kept asking lots and lots of questions and listening. And we learned early on that the old title of the website, mormonsandgays.org, was divisive. It reinforced an us versus them dichotomy. And it was a false dichotomy of two sides on this issue. And we gathered from there more than 30 individual stories, asking people to share their journey. And we then shared those personal narratives with church leaders, and they in turn provided us more guidance and more questions to be asking. And so as we began to develop the site content, we had the different drafts going in different directions where we were soliciting input from various stakeholders. We wanted to understand their perspective. It was a pretty transparent process. And we approached with two questions: what provides hope, and what helps you stay in the Savior's light? And I have to tell you, when I began this assignment, I considered myself to be relatively open-minded. I thought I understood more than the average person. I have family members who identify as gay, and I thought it gave me some kind of insight. But I soon realized how very little I knew or truly understand. And one thing was extremely clear for me, time and time again, that this experience is often the very crucible that drives people to their knees, where they find God, and they find an experience with the divine that is unique to them. And it's often a defining point in a faith journey. So the decision to integrate the website into our larger website, which is lds.org, was significant. And to change the website URL from mormonsandgays.org to mormonandgay.lds.org was inspired and intentional. And it was intentional in that we wanted it to convey to everyone that you can be both Mormon and gay. that those two titles are not mutually exclusive, and that it's possible to be both. And we feel that they could coexist and even harmonize in beautiful and meaningful ways. We stayed in touch with community partners through that development process. We were very aware that there were LGBTQ suicides, especially among teens, and that was a concern to us. We felt the urgency. And I started to ask public questions about our rhetoric and how we were having this conversation. Not just this one, but many in the public arena, I think, as faith-based groups. We can reality check ourselves and ask if we are hyper-polarized in our rhetoric, not only as a country, but as a people of faith. And are we routinely divided along some line? Do we allow a victim vocabulary to frame the conversation on both sides? And do we recognize the battlefield-like vernacular that we tend to employ as we talk about these issues? Do we label people as evil simply because they see things differently than we do? And have we inadvertently turned every issue and every conversation into some kind of zero-sum game where we all lose? And is it always us versus them? I learned that there is not one of us that is part of this greater conversation by accident. And I've come to strongly believe that we are all stewards of this experience and this dynamic, this greater conversation. We all have a role to play. And I've asked myself many times as I reality check my own perceptions and my own thought processes, am I more concerned with charity than parity? And do I understand that having charity is the ability to see others through God's eyes, that they are also a child of heavenly parents and there is divine within them? And they are not the enemy and they are not the problem. In fact, they may be very well part of the solution. And seeing others through God's eyes isn't easy. It's not easy in these complicated conversations, especially when that other person might be labeling us or boxing us in or talking over us or twisting every word we say. It's not easy to have charity and look on a person's heart when we know that the ripples from their words or their actions might hurt others or appear in a newspaper or even turn you into a caricature. But I ask you earnestly, can we look on one another's hearts and can we see each other as God's equally divine child? Can we see that everyone's on their own path to becoming all that God wants them to be? And can we, like our Savior on the cross, forgive them for not knowing? Don't we believe we're all at a single point, after all, on our own spiritual journeys, and that we believe further light and knowledge and truth will come to all of us? Eventually, we will all know the truth. I've come to believe that in our community outreach, that is the very place where we best demonstrate and where we a living faith. It's the place we demonstrate a living faith. It's the place we practice what we preach. It's the very place we begin to practice discipleship. If we're true followers of our Savior, Jesus Christ, we can show in the public square what faith lived looks like. So I leave that with you as my opening remarks, and I'll give the microphone to Addison. Thanks for having me today.
These are very hard to get out of their stance. Okay. Thanks.
So my name is, my name is Addison Jenkins, and I am the only openly gay person at this conference, as far as I know. So I'm really glad that you're all here. To be quite honest, I've been very apprehensive about being here at all, and being on this panel. My qualifications, as they were to be here, are that I served as the president of USGA, which stands for Understanding Same Gender Attraction, which is an organization or club run by BYU students and BYU faculty. And the mission of our organization is to save and improve the lives of LGBTQ and same-sex attracted students at BYU. It's not a club sponsored or officially endorsed by the university at this time, but we've worked closely with them. We've met on campus before, and I've had long, ongoing conversations with both Liz and Steve and also Allie about the website. what I wanted to share, I guess, is just kind of my experience and my approach. I kind of, a little contrary to what Steve said, when I became president of USGA, I was aware that we had not had the best relations with the administrators. We hadn't really had much of an ongoing dialogue, except for my predecessor with one administrator. And I knew that from some experiences that I'd been told about, there were some, at the very least, some apprehensions on both sides, if not some burned bridges or bad blood. And I took it upon myself. I said, you know, nothing is going to change, nothing is going to get better unless I reach out and try to say in whatever way I can, hey, you know, I don't know what happened in the past, but I'm here to make things better for LGBT students and for the university as a whole. And so I went on this precocious tour of the administration building and went to various administrators and just kind of knocked on their doors and said, hi, I don't know if you know who I am. I'm the new president of this gay group, and I would like to talk to you about, you know, what your experience is and what ways we can work together. And I was surprised that overall, I was warmly welcomed. I didn't exactly know what to expect. There was definitely some fear and apprehension in some of my first meetings. I remember talking to one person in particular, and as soon as I said who I was and you know what I was from, I could see the defenses kind of come up. But through as Steve said, long conversations and years now of working with these people, I've come to trust them and grown to like them and have a friendship with them. And I'd like to think that approach is one that is useful and applicable for all of us in all sorts of aspects of our lives, but particularly in the context of religious freedom and obviously LGBTQ people. Frequently, I think I hear the term LGBTQ issues or the LGBTQ community. And I'm not here to nitpick words or, you know, be the word police. But I would encourage you to think about this topic as LGBTQ people. I am not a political issue. I'm not. I didn't sign up to be a ballot initiative. I didn't sign up to be a platform in either party's or a plank in either party's political platform. I was born and I grew up, and one day I realized that I was gay. While I was here at BYU, I've served a mission. I am a member of the church. I'm still here at BYU. And these issues they're tricky and they're take a lot to untangle. But I'd like to just help us remember that we're all people, as Ali was saying, and that LGBTQ people are people. And hopefully hopefully I'm not threatening, and most of the gay people that I know, you look at them and you'd say, oh, I didn't know you were gay. You're not threatening to me. You're just a person. You're my next door neighbor. You're my cousin or my grandkid. The other thing I wanted to start off with too is what I've learned is the importance of honesty. And I think frequently in my experience and in the experiences of my friends who are queer or LGBTQ or same-sex attracted, we have learned over years, sometimes decades of life experience, to censor ourselves because what we are, what we say, what we think is threatening to the people that love us the most. And in order to retain that love, we've censored or cut off parts of ourselves so that we can still have their love. The problem with that is that you grow up experiencing validation and affirmation and love, but knowing that other person doesn't know you truly. And too frequently, I think in these kind of conversations, we do similar things. We're afraid of saying, that really hurt, what was just said or what you just did or the law that was passed or this policy or whatever. That hurts. Because we're afraid if we say, oh, that hurts, the person will shut down or they'll leave. And so one thing I'd like to encourage is honesty on both sides. I was just at a 4th of July family outing, and it was not my family, but a friend of mine, and it was a disaster, it was a mess. And what I recognized was happening was that both sides were being deeply hurt by things that the other people had said or done. And without acknowledging that, you can't move past it. And so whenever we're answering questions today, I'm going to try and be honest and transparent in the way things that have affected me in good ways and in bad ways so that we can make progress and move past that. And I just wanted to also say thank you to Steve and to Ali and Liz for all the work that they've done and for making this panel happen and be possible. Thanks.
I'm grateful to be here as well, and especially to be here with Steve and Ali and Addison, who have all become very dear friends of mine. My journey with this really just started back in October. I work as an associate athletic director and the senior woman administrator here at BYU in the athletic department. And some of you may know that last summer there was a lot of conversations around BYU athletics around joining a conference. And in those discussions, there were issues brought up about BYU and LGBTQ people. I was not involved very much in that process, but in the fall, BYU became aware of an initiative through the NCAA called Common Ground, where administrators from faith-based and public institutions were invited to meet with LGBTQ advocates to find common ground. The first meeting happened in 2014. There were, I believe, about 40 participants. BYU was not one of them. And the Common Ground Initiative wasn't widely known, still isn't very widely known. I was assigned to research this initiative to see if it would be something that BYU should be involved in. And in reading the report from 2014, I was very impressed with the dialogue that occurred. I honestly expected to read something that felt unfair or that felt one-sided, and I was mistaken. As I read about what occurred, it very much felt like something BYU would want to be a part of. And so as I reported to my boss, and he reported up his line, just the suggestion that this is something we might want to become involved in. I had no idea at the time that I would be the one that would be asked to represent BYU at Common Ground 2, which occurred in early November. That was not really by design, and the way it all happened, honestly, I really believe was just by our Father in Heaven, and for whatever reason, I was the voice that was needed in the room. I am very humbled by it and grateful for that opportunity. It has shaped some incredible experiences since. So I went to Indianapolis to represent BYU, again, about 40 representatives, about 13 of whom were from faith-based institutions or would describe themselves as a person of faith. There were some that would describe themselves as an LGBTQ person of faith, and then many there that would have described themselves as an LGBTQ person not of faith. Some of the organizations that were there were the Center for Lesbian Rights, Athlete Ally, and Break the Silence, Go Athlete, and others. And some people that are major influencers within the NCAA circles. And as you may know, the NCAA has become more and more involved in our country in social issues. The experiences there were remarkable and too hard to sum up in just a few minutes. But one experience that happened there I do want to share. I feel like it is probably the best example of the spirit that truly was there. We were asked to stand in a circle, one of the very first activities, so that we could get to know one another better. And the moderator said statements such as, "Join me on common ground if you are da 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 da." And the first were very very innocent. "Join me on common ground if you're the oldest in your family, or if you're from the West Coast, or whatever. And you would step forward if the statement applied to you, which gave us the opportunity to look around the room and just get to know who else was in the room. Then they got more personal, and it was, join me on common ground if you consider yourself spiritual, and probably two-thirds step forward. And then join me on common ground if you consider yourself religious, and maybe half. Join me on common ground if you are Christian, and maybe a third. And then I was very surprised at the statement, join me on common ground if you're Mormon. And I stepped forward, but immediately felt the anxiety well up in me, knowing that this now identified me as the only Mormon in the room. I felt pointed out. I felt exposed. I felt judged. I wondered how I was being misjudged. And I felt very uncomfortable. And I stepped back, and it took me a few minutes to sort of gather myself as the questions continued. The questions from there even got more personal, where the moderator had finished their questions, and then we were invited as participants if we wanted to make our own common ground statements. And there were a few that did. One gentleman made the statement, join me on common ground, and pardon my language, but if you've ever been called a faggot. And multiple men stepped forward. And then another, join me on common ground if you've ever been told you're going to hell by someone in your church because you're gay. And multiple people stepped forward. Join me on common ground if you've ever attempted suicide because of your sexuality. And multiple people stepped forward. And my heart broke as these people stepped forward, and I could feel a great amount of pain in the room. And it became very clear to me that there is a reason why people are fighting so hard around issues of LGBTQ. It is very personal, just as it is very personal to myself and others as people of faith. It is also very personal to those that are LGBTQ advocates, and it was interesting to frame the 2 days within that context. Interestingly, of all the common ground statements that were made, and there were probably 30 of them, the only one where only one person stepped forward was the if you're Mormon. And so even though there are other questions that were much more hard or personal, there's at least someone else in that inner circle that you could sort of look across from and say, I got you, right? I get it, or I've been there, or hey, I've got your back. But mine, I was truly it. And I wondered who on earth in this room was going to claim me. The LGBTQ advocates certainly weren't going to claim me, and the evangelicals in the room, I was not sure would even claim me. And so I felt very alone. It dawned on me that I wonder if this is how it might feel to be an LGBTQ student at BYU or in the church, where you feel exposed, where you feel alone, where you may feel judged or misjudged, and not know where you can turn or who might be in that inner circle that you can look at and say, I've got you, I understand, I've been there. Moving on to a later activity, we were talking about triggers, phrases that might trigger a person of faith or might trigger an LGBTQ person. And we were very careful also to understand that these are not mutually exclusive. There are many LGBTQ people of faith. But for the purposes of many of these conversations, it certainly felt like and often feels like this is two sides of an issue. And there was an athletic director at an evangelical school that was asked to talk about what he as an AD is so scared of around these issues. And he talked about meeting LGBTQ advocates who had expressed that their sole purpose in life was to get their school kicked out of the NCAA. And that was hard as an athletic director to hear that and to think that his student athletes may not have that opportunity. At that point, someone in the front of the room said, oh, like BYU and the Big 12. And everyone sort of turned and looked back at me. And I could feel the eyes of all 40 on me and knew that I needed to respond in some way. I talked about how we have 630 student athletes at BYU. most of whom are LDS, some of whom are not. And I would say most of whom are straight, but some of whom are not. They've all chosen to have their experience, their athletic experience at BYU. And for the majority of them, it's largely because of the environment of BYU. It's because of the values, it's because of what it stands for, it's because of our affiliation with and sponsorship from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so all of our student athletes have chosen to have that experience here, and that it does sadden me to think that there are those that don't want BYU to be able to have some of those opportunities in our student athletes. Because our student athletes have chosen to have it here, Mormon and non and straight and gay. Our student athletes have chosen to have that experience here. What I had said was a trigger for someone in the audience, and he expressed that me saying that was a trigger, because he expressed that while I was talking about sports and worried about sports, he was worried about lives, and he was worried about the lives of LGBTQ students across the country who don't feel safe on their college campus, and who are attempting suicide. And so he felt triggered by my comment about sports and thought, you're worried about sports and I'm worried about lives. As he was speaking, I felt a little misjudged or misunderstood, and knew that my response would be very important and possibly the most important in terms of what happened in those 2 days in terms of representing BYU. It probably wasn't going to matter what happened before, and it may not matter what happened afterward. My response to his being triggered by that, and he was very upset, would likely define this experience for me or BYU there, and so I silently prayed that I would just know how to respond in a way that would be pleasing to the Lord and that would represent BYU well and accurately. And I found myself in responding talking about the lives of our students and how much we love them and care about them and how important they are to BYU, and talking about how they belong at BYU and how I was so grateful for him for responding to give me the chance to then respond, because I would never want to be misunderstood. And if he had let that go, I may have been misunderstood. And so I was grateful for him to express his anger, because it gave me the chance to clarify and to explain that absolutely lives are the most important thing. And we were there at the NCAA talking in the context of sports, but that this issue truly is about the lives of our young people. And we care about our students at BYU. We want them to be safe. We want them to be healthy. We want them to be happy. And we want them to feel support and know that they belong at BYU. As I finished clarifying that, again, I felt a lot of anxiety, just feeling again, very alone. And I was surprised. The director of inclusion at the NCAA, Dr. Amy Wilson, who oversees this Common Ground initiative, who herself is an LGBTQ advocate, also a woman of faith, she immediately rose her hand and explained to the group. She said, I think it's really important for everyone to understand how BYU came to be a part of this. And this is part of the story I didn't tell, but she said BYU was not invited to Common Ground. They are here because Liz sought out a session on LGBTQ inclusion at a conference and introduced herself to the speakers afterward who are a part of Common Ground and asked how BYU might become involved. They created a spot for us. Invitations had been out for months. 3 weeks before Common Ground is when that occurred. And so she explained to the group, she said, I think it says a lot about BYU's intentions and motivations that they sought this out to be a part of this Common Ground. Dr. Wilson, in that moment, was an ally to BYU and an ally to me without ever really knowing me yet. But she spoke up for me in a way that I maybe couldn't speak up for myself at that point. And then right after that, a woman at my table named Pat Griffin, who throughout the day people had referred to as the godmother of lesbian rights and athletics, who she and I had talked briefly at the beginning, she turned around, literally turned around from her table, looked me in the eye, and just said, "Liz, are you okay?" Because she could hear the emotion as I was responding to this kind of verbal attack. And I immediately started to weep. But here was another example of her showing, being an ally to me in checking on me to see if I was okay. Those experiences, to me, were an incredible metaphor as now I have continued to move forward and BYU continues to move forward to work on these things. And I hope that I can be the ally that Amy and Pat were to me, a person of faith representing a school of faith, as I work with our LGBTQ students. Can I and do I stand up for them and speak for them in a way that maybe they can't for themselves? And do I metaphorically turn around, look them in the eye, and say, "Are you okay?" And let them know that I am willing to walk their journey with them and help them while they're at BYU. That Common Ground experience was remarkable. It was very sacred in a lot of ways, and has turned into some really neat opportunities on campus, including Dr. Amy Wilson visiting our campus for 2 days at the invitation of President Worthen and Tom Homo, and working with and meeting with our athletic department and many of our students in BYUSA and leaders across campus to help us learn how to have these conversations and how to be more inclusive. One of the neatest things she taught us is the difference between diversity and inclusion. And diversity, they're both kind of buzzwords at this point, but diversity is, you know, making sure that everyone's represented in the room. You look around the table and do you have everyone represented? Inclusion is making sure that everyone around that table feels like they have a voice and feels like they are welcome. And I think that's an important distinction. And so as we work as an athletic department to be more inclusive of not only LGBTQ, but inclusive of our racial minority student athletes and inclusive of our student athletes that aren't members of the church, that is a great reminder for us as to is what are we doing to help them know that they belong here, that they feel valued, that their voice is important. And so I think that's, yeah, there we go.
Thank you to each of you, Allie and Addison and Liz. I'll start off with a question for each of you, and then happy to take questions from the attendees as well. My question for you, Allie, is maybe you could help talk through the concept of definitions. I know the website goes into the concept of what do words mean, how are they used. If you'll talk a little bit about that, including how the word gay has changed over time in society and also within kind of the church's understanding of it. Addison, while she's answering that, I want you to think through some specific examples. You and I have talked about many of these, of what has been helpful at BYU when people's interactions with you as an openly gay student have made you feel included, and ones where we could improve. Just a few specific examples. You've told some. I'd love you to think some of those. And then Liz, if you would share the ways that some of our teams have rallied around an LGBTQ athlete on the team, and also some of the inadvertent things, like, for example, a misplaced joke or something, and how those conversations have gone in ways that can improve our own understanding and inclusion at BYU.
Okay. How has the definition, how have definitions changed? At one point, I was pressed by some to whom I report to provide them a list of definitions because it felt as if the landscape was constantly moving and they were unsure if they were properly using terminology. And while I did so to comply with the request, I did so with a giant caveat that if we don't know what a word means to somebody, we need to ask them because words have very individual meaning and meaning can change over time. And a perfect example is the word gay. And there were many conversations that I had with leaders who felt that the word gay implied someone was having gay sex, whereas others felt like gay was an identifier of more than a person's sexuality, that it was more encompassing of identity in a broader way and in a broader sense of, and a deeper sense of attributes. So we had many conversations about the evolution of the word and the use of the word. And if we understood who our target audience would be for this website, who would be consumers of the content there, we needed to understand what the vocabulary was that they were using. And it was very clear to us through not only focus groups and survey work, but individual conversations, that how we used words mattered. So you'll note on the website, if you've spent any time there, there is alternative references to both gay, or those who identify as gay, or those who experience same-sex attraction. We didn't lock it into anything. We did forego using same gender attracted. We felt that terminology had become outdated. But it was so clear to me in one particular focus group when we talked about terminology and how to even have the conversation, because vocabulary is a foundation for discussion. We were told time and again by individuals who identify as gay, if you don't know what I mean, please ask me. Just ask me. So we were hoping, if anything, to foster a dialogue and to create safe space for that conversation, to help people better understand one another, but then to start to have the conversation as families, as congregations, and as leaders. And I have to tell you, there are two speeches in particular that if you work in this arena, I'd encourage you to listen to. I've listened to them hundreds of times, and they were given on this very campus by Elder Maxwell. They are his classic talks on patience and meekness. And there is a lot of guidance there in terms of how you have difficult conversations in the public square and how we need to better understand one another and honor one another's agency and honor the value of time and what it does to help change meaning and help create understanding, and then to be humble and to be willing to be taught and to give people space to grow in their understanding. So that would be my response.
Thank you.
Does that suffice? Okay.
So, yeah, there's obviously, being gay at BYU is, I'm going to say, a mixed bag. I'll start off with negative so I can end with positive. In one of my first meetings with somebody from BYU as USGA president, touching on language, I was astounded at the lack of this person that I was meeting with used, I'll be specific so this story makes a little more sense. He said, you know, I'm still learning, I'm still figuring things out. I have this person who was working for me and she was trying to teach me some things, and I found out that her, you know, she taught me that her pronoun was bi. And the other USGA person I was in the meeting with, we looked at each other and we're like, what? And simple, it could have been a slip of the tongue, could have been I don't know what. But it was the fact that bi, for those of you who don't, so bi is a sexual orientation. It means you're attracted to people of both genders. Pronouns are he, him, her, or he, him, his, she, her, hers, identify your gender or your gender expression. And clearly, he had mixed the two up, and as far as we could tell, he had no real understanding of what it meant to be gay and what it meant to be transgender or just a man or what a pronoun is. And that's silly and small and simple, right? Like that's it's a word. It's a two-letter word. But to me and to my, you know, friends that were with me, it communicated that we were talking to somebody who had no real understanding. And repeated conversations and subsequent topics reiterated that this person just didn't understand what it meant to be gay. And that's just, it's a kind of a scary place to be, because my job in that meeting, I felt, was to educate this person and say, hey, there are students here at BYU. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of LGBTQ students or same-sex attracted students. And if you don't understand what it means to be gay or to be same-sex attracted or to be transgender, then how can you help these people? So that was a very nerve-wracking moment, because that was at the beginning of the 2 and now almost 3 years now that I've been involved in this, and I thought, you know, this is a long way to go if I have to teach this person what bi is and what a pronoun is. On the other hand, I've had, I'll share this experience. I joined, as Steve said, we have a comedy sketch comedy group called Divine Comedy. If you're familiar with Studio C, we are what Studio C came from. We're the, you know, understudies, kind of. If you want Matt Meese's phone number, I can get it for you. So I tried out the year before I became USJ president, and I was the last. We had 8 people at the end, and they took 6. And they took 3 guys and 3 girls, and I was the last guy cut. And I was obviously a little disappointed, but I was like, eh, it's fine. And then 6 months after that, I applied for and became the USJ president. And then in the fall of the 6 months later, I thought, you know, maybe I should try out for Divine Comedy again. And I had friends now that were on the cast, and some people were encouraging me to. And I thought too, I said, you know, I'm really busy with USJ. I have been at BYU for a zillion years, and I should graduate. I really don't have time to be pursuing something else. And then I thought, you know what? If I could be on the cast, not to push some agenda, not to do anything, but to be able to get up on stage and perform, and for those people who I know and for people who I don't know to come to our shows and say, hey, that guy up there, he's gay, and he's at BYU, and he's part of this comedy group, and he's just a normal dude, and I get cast in straight date sketches all the time, and I'm always the husband with the wife, and I'm always on the date, that would be meaningful. So I tried out, and I thought, okay, we'll see how this goes, and I made it, and I was like, wow, this is fun. And then all of a sudden I realized, up until that point, I had mostly gay friends at that point in my kind of college career, and I was really nervous again. I said, oh, I haven't been in a situation where I have all these new straight people that I have to introduce myself to, and they're going to say, you're 26, and you're not married, and you're at BYU, and you're so funny, and you're so, like, why aren't you married? And I was really apprehensive. And the first week that I went to rehearsal, it happened to be my birthday that week, and one of the cast members said, hey, it's, you know, like, let's all go out for ice cream afterwards, it's Addison's birthday. And it was me and just the girls that were on cast, and we went and got ice cream. And somehow, I don't even remember how it happened, but I could tell that they were either thought I might be gay, or they, either way, they were going to be cool. And we just had a casual conversation about that. And instantly, I was like, oh, I feel so safe. There's no way I could have been a performer or been funny or comedic or anything like that if I hadn't had friends and fellow students and fellow performers who told me. They said, oh, yeah, that's cool, that's fine, or tell me more about it, or what's it like, or is it hard, or anything like that. And so fellow students, I think, have been, by and large, the most positive experiences I've had. They haven't always been perfect, but the students who are straight and who are good allies and who have reached out and made an extra effort to make me feel included, recognizing that I might have felt alone or vulnerable, I think have really made my BYU experience what it's been and worth it and bearable in the times that it's been hard.
Going off of what Addison said is, as we've met with our student athlete leaders to have these conversations, we have found that they are much more prepared to have these conversations than maybe we are as the administrators or as the coaches. In some ways, I feel like we're telling them things like, yeah, I got that. Yeah, I know that. And that's been a really neat learning process for us. And really, I would say teaching how to become an ally. And words matter. Allie's talked about that. Addison's talked about that. The importance of what that means to be an ally. It does not mean that you agree with everything that someone else may believe. But it means that you will stand up for the fair and respectful treatment of them. And so as we have talked to our student athlete leaders about that, about how they can be an ally on their teams, with their teammates in their locker rooms, and then just even across campus, our student athletes have a voice that maybe some other students don't. They have really embraced that and are excited to expand that role even as we move into the next year. But also, as we have met with not just our students, but our coaches and our employees in the athletic department, one of the important pieces as we've talked to them and had these dialogues is to talk about where else in the world would we want our LDS gay youth to go to school than BYU? Where else in the world would we want them to go? They belong here, and we want them here. And what can we do to increase and enhance the support, that feeling of safety for them, so that they feel that and know that? Because if they're not here, they are other places. And I would hope that they are here, where they can be surrounded by other students who share their faith, by other students who are striving to be disciples of our Savior Jesus Christ, and surrounded by professors and administrators that have a testimony and that want to help them on their path of discipleship. Allie talked about we're all on our own path. Where else in the world would we want our gay LDS youth to be than at BYU? And that has been neat as we have dialogued with now us more as administration and coaches to understand that message and what we each personally can do in our own sphere of influence to make sure that that message is felt by our gay students and in teaching our other student athletes how to be good allies.
Thank you all. Do we have any questions people would like to ask? Why don't we start right here and then to you and then to you third. Please go ahead, right up here in the front.
Thank you all very much. Unfortunately, so often it seems that it is split into camps, right? The religious freedom camp, you could say, versus the LGBTQ rights activism camp. And although that's not what we want, it's so often framed that way. And just to give an example that I posted about being at this conference, and one of my friends who would find himself much less in the religious freedom camp and much more in the LGBT rights camp, comment.
Who would like to start?
You made me start last time.
Allie, you're off the hook. Go ahead, Addison.
There's a lot there. I'm gonna try and I'll start with the thing that I came to mind, and if we haven't answered your question, you can double back. I'm gay and I'm Mormon. At no university
of the first semester.
That's right.
He's also a ventriloquist.
I'm gay and I'm Mormon. At no university in this country that I'm aware of would I not be able to say that I'm Mormon, to bring a Book of Mormon, to go to church, to hold a calling, to talk to my friends about being Mormon, to go to the temple, to do anything that a Mormon does, right? There might be specific religious schools like BYU, but I mean, even BYU lets in non-members, right? But at BYU, and at a host of evangelical universities and other faith-based institutions, I can say that I'm gay, but that's it. At this university and at most other universities, there are no resources for LGBT students. I don't know of Mormon college students at Harvard or at Notre Dame or at UCLA who are depressed and suicidal and attempting and committing suicide because their university has policies in place or because their colleagues or their students or their professors are saying things like, you Mormons are destroying the family, or you Mormons are sinners and going to hell. I grew up in Texas. I'm familiar with what it's like to be a Mormon as a minority in a culture that is not super friendly to Mormons. And it wasn't the easiest thing. By no means do I want to say that Mormons have a cakewalk all over the country. But I can very easily see the difference between the potential persecution or safety threats or things like that I face as a Mormon and as an LGBT student, and they're night and day. And I am sympathetic to the religious freedom that is not enjoyed by minority religions, especially outside of this country, in the Middle East and in Africa. I served my mission in Madagascar. Those are real and pressing issues. There are Coptic Christians in Egypt that are fearing for their lives, and in Iraq and Syria, obviously. But in the context of the United States, kind of like what Liz was talking about, to me, this is a discussion between: are these people safe? Are they hurting so bad that they want to kill themselves? Or are we talking about sports or something that's, in my opinion, not as grave as that? That's my answer to that.
So I don't mean to be challenging, but I want to challenge the premise of your question, because it's, in communication, so often how we talk about issues is how we frame them. We talk about framing. We talk about what's the context of the conversation that we're having. And I want to challenge the very context that you've offered, that it's either religious freedom or LGBT rights, that somehow this conversation is us versus them. The faith tradition to which I subscribe has scripture that talks about opposition in all things, and it outlines things that are opposites. But those opposites that are outlined are not people, they're attributes. And we have a responsibility to see the people in the conversation. So I would encourage us to see this as a conversation of human beings rather than an us versus them. Because when we start to do that, then your friend's question becomes a launch pad for understanding. I welcome those kind of questions that say, hey, I see this as like your viewpoint and my viewpoint are mutually exclusive or very different. There's an opportunity there to find understanding and common ground. And I would argue that as a disciple of Jesus Christ, I have a covenant responsibility to find that common ground, and that the entire point of this greater conversation is not in the outcome of the conversation. It's not in the public policy decision necessarily. It's in the fact that we're having the conversation in the first place, and we're striving for mutual understanding, and we're striving for a deeper commitment to one another to help each other stay in the light and understand what our faith tradition prescribes, and that is discipleship and love of others. And often I will hear people say, well, it's like a two-sided coin. You have love on one side and you have the law on the other side. And we do this sort of dichotomy often in the way we frame an issue in a conversation. But I would contend that love is the law. Love is the law. And in most faith traditions, we subscribe to love of God and love of other human beings as the highest commandments that we have. And if those are our highest commandments, then we take that into the public square and we have the dialogue about these issues, and we can achieve mutual understanding. But and when you approach the conversation through love and through striving to understand one another, and not in terms of zero sum, ground gained or lost, when you approach it and trying to understand one another, you actually find you're changed by that conversation. You're altered by that conversation. You're both taken to a higher plane in that conversation. So these points of divergence and the questions, I think, are fantastic opportunities for mutual understanding and appreciation.
We have unfortunately reached the very end of our panel. I encourage those two people with questions to come up and talk to us. We'll take a 15-minute break. We will then repeat this panel. And if any of you ask questions in the break, too, I anticipate that our panelists will address it in the next one as well. I just want to say a great thank you to Ali and to Addison and to Liz, and not just for what they've shared, but for who they are. And I appreciate each of them. Thank you.